This is the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, Dr. Andy Johnson. The topic of today's podcast is whole language and evidence-based reading instruction. So let's see if we can learn a thing or two today. In 1967, Ken Goodman published an article in Reading Research Quarterly with the title, Reading, a Psycholinguistic Guessing Game. Here, he applied psycholinguistic theory to the reading process. A pretty good article, yes? I highly recommend reading it. However, two words have been pulled from the title, reading and guessing. And these two words have become a Rorschach inkblot test for those who would disagree with or don't understand Dr. Goodman's ideas. All sorts of dark and scary images have been projected upon them. These Rorschachian projections have been used for the last 50 years to misrepresent whole language and to discredit the work of Ken Goodman. Evidence-based. Now, the common idea is that whole language went away because it was, quote, debunked, unquote. But with real reading science, we don't go around debunking things. We support or reject hypotheses, and the results of supported or rejected hypotheses are used to build theories. And results can also be used to provide evidence for certain practices. These are called evidence-based practices. However, evidence-based practices or evidence-based instruction does not mean that something has been proven to work. This is a common misconception of that term. It simply means that you can provide research-based evidence to support a strategy or practice. In other words, there is research someplace in the world showing that something worked. But keep in mind, at the same time, there may also be research someplace in the world showing that same thing doesn't work. Evidence without context is meaningless. Evidence is evidence of a particular thing for a particular purpose at a particular time with a particular population in a particular setting. It's not evidence for everything. We must be very particular with our understanding of evidence. So when the term evidence-based is used, we must always consider used for who, for what, collected in what context, collected in what situations, for students at what level, determined by what kinds of measures, and determined by who. Now let's look at evidence for phonics instruction. We can say that direct and explicit instruction of phonics is an evidence-based practice. Yes, we can. There is ample evidence that if you teach phonics, students are going to score higher on measures of phonics. All well and good. But we can't say phonics instruction has been proven to work. And we can't say direct instruction of phonics is a settled science or part of a settled science. There is no settled science of reading. And we can't say more phonics instruction is better than less phonics instruction. We can't say that a particular type of phonics instruction is better than another. We can't say that all students need direct instruction of phonics. We can't say direct and explicit instruction of phonics is better than something else. We can't even say that phonics instruction improves students' ability to create meaning with print. We can't say any of these things. We can only say that if you teach something, post-test measures of the something that you taught are most often going to rise. But we already knew that, didn't we? Now, I'm going to provide an extreme example here that illustrates the point I'm trying to make. This is an extreme example, but it allows you to see what I'm getting at. Let's say a researcher conducted a study where an experimental group of first grade students were given electric dog collars to wear. Every time they misbehaved, they would get zapped. A control group of first grade students were not given electric dog collars to wear. After 3 months, if you compared the experimental group to the control group, you might indeed find that there were significantly fewer misbehaviors in the experimental group. And you could technically say that putting electric dog collars on first grade students and zapping them is an evidence-based practice. And for the record, this is something I'm strongly against. But it has nothing to do with reading instruction, and it doesn't consider a myriad of other factors, including the considerable emotional damage done to children. And again, this is an extreme example of evidence, but it illustrates my point. Just saying that something is said to be evidence-based does not end the discussion. It began the discussion, starting with an examination of the research studies cited. And this, my friends, is the first step in becoming a responsible consumer of educational research. That's why in my book, I'm devoting a whole chapter to reading and understanding educational research. Now, let's look at the debunking of whole language. Let me tell you a story about how whole language came to be debunked. Once upon a time, children were reading real books and writing real stories. It was a magical time. Teachers made decisions about their students based on their students, not what someone else said their students should be or do. And there was joy in our classrooms as children talked about the books they read and shared the stories they'd written. But sometime in the 1990s, the profiteers realized that with this new whole language stuff, there was not a step-by-step method that could be marketed. Teacher knowledge and autonomy was not a commodity that could be sold. And there were far fewer consumable workbooks and overpriced reading programs that schools needed to buy. So, of course, the educational industrial complex and their armies of toady consultants were against whole language. It was bad for profits. They just couldn't stand for that sort of thing. And they declared it bad. They declared it to be debunked. Aha, they'd say anytime a score went down, or even if it didn't. We told you, they said, it's that whole language stuff. They're teaching kids to guess at words. And anytime a kid couldn't sound out a word any place in the world, someone would pop up and say, it's all that whole language stuff. It just doesn't make sense. But here's the thing. Whole language is all about making sense. It's about keeping language whole and meaningful so that students can learn to use phonics and other information to make sense of what they read. and it's instruction that aligns with the human brain's natural tendency to see patterns, make predictions, fill in the blanks, and make sense of things. So, the profiteers from the educational industrial complex convinced the tale tellers in the media that a crisis in reading had befallen the land. The educational overlords were likewise made to think that there was a reading crisis. They were told that the cause of this crisis was that schools were not buying and using their products with fidelity. As well, teacher preparation programs were not teaching pre-service teachers to use their products with fidelity. And today, across the land, it is a bleak and dreary literacy landscape. You'd be hard-pressed to find a reading workshop, a writing workshop, or even a four-blocks classroom. There is no joy in Mudville. The profiteers and their toadies laughed as they sat on their yachts smoking their fat cigars somewhere out there in the Gulf of Lexia Learning. "What a bunch of suckers," they said. "I can't believe they fell for it again." But upon the land, there rose a mighty bald little knight. He was armed with sarcasm, snarky comments, and a body of knowledge related to literacy learning and related research. "I shall stop them," he boldly declared in his high nasal voice, with his pointer finger thrust highly into the air. He marched confidently into the principal's office at Mudville Elementary School, slammed his latest book upon the desk, and said, "I am here to save you." He was ushered out of the building by the armed school security officer. This has been the Reading Instruction Show. I'm your host, Dr. Andy Johnson.